sanity and rational thought back to America. Rick Smith.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, therickSmithShow.com. So we bombed Syria without really having a long game. Bombed Afghanistan with the mother of all bombs. And look, you got to love the messaging there. Good chest thumping. You know, lots of false pride there. We have the mother of all bombs. We put Iran on notice. And this morning, Vice President Pence, in his green play military jacket aboard the U.S. Ronald Reagan, said, quote, "The United States of America will always seek peace under President Trump. The shield stands guard and the sword stands ready." He said, "Those who would challenge our resolve or readiness should know we will defeat any attacks and meet any use of conventional or nuclear weapons with an overwhelming and effective American response." And, you know, to me, nothing changes the topic like a good bombing. And like I said, you know, we were focused on the right things, what Russian was doing, what Russia had done with our elections, the collaboration or collusion, however you want to put it, just the failures of this administration. And now it's all bombing all the time. And our news media, like lapdogs, went right to it. Well, here to talk about the shiny thing and help us focus, I've asked our good friend Propane Jane to come talk with us. Jane, thanks for taking time for us.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me back.
So nothing changes the topic like a good bombing.
I guess.
Here we were, you know, we were talking about the right stuff. We were focused, I think, as a country on the right things. And now all the saber rattling and all of the wanting to start wars on a whole bunch of different continents, kind of scary stuff.
It's very scary. And I, again, you know, I just keep going back to instability and cheese and the schoolyard bully. And just this belief that he seems to have that all he has to do is be aggressive and be bellicose and that somehow that's going to erase just the sheer level of incompetence that's coming out of this administration, let alone the corruption and the treasonous activities that he has been engaged in, as well as, you know, various members of his cabinet.
Now, I agree. But, you know, here's the thing. As I watched his speech yesterday, I couldn't help but go, man, this guy is a brilliant con artist. This guy's he could sell, you know, a ketchup popsicle to a woman wearing white gloves on a hot day.
Yeah. I mean, this is why, you know, I think it's so important, again, that we understand narcissism and antisocial personality. You know, because, again, I think that, you know, the term antisocial kind of misleads people and makes you think that an individual who is antisocial, it cannot be charming or cannot be brilliant or cannot come across as someone who, you know, can be popular and just endearing to people. And so what's actually, you know, coming through is that really antisocial people in a lot of ways are very charming, and they can actually trick you. And you know, when I'm at work, I can always tell who has antisocial traits by how well I get along with them, actually.
Wow.
And how much they're doing to kind of win me over. And how much they're trying to impress me and, you know, sort of
influence.
Get me to be on their side. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And so, like you said, you know, selling ketchup to a lady in a white dress, this is the art of the deal, right? This is what his entire, you know, business strategy and entrepreneurial prowess has been based on. It's been based on sweet talking people, schmoozing, saying what he thinks people want to hear. And unfortunately, again, we live in a society that wants to hear this bravado and wants to see somebody be very aggressive. And so he's basically just playing to that mentality. And you know, it seems to be working, at least in terms of the media.
No, I mean, you know, the idea of a president being unpredictable as something that should be endearing and something that we go, yeah, that's what we want. We want the crazy guy with his fingers on the button. That's kind of scary, Jane.
It's very scary, and I also, you know, have to just go back to these voters because they wanted this. They wanted somebody who was going to go to Washington and literally just detonate a bomb, you know, in the middle of the White House.
Well, some of the voters, Jane. Remember, as much as he loves to talk about his huge, enormous, historic victory, he did lose by 3 million votes.
He absolutely did, but in his mind, he won. And he's focusing on the Electoral College. He's focusing on the voters who wanted him specifically. And even if you go back to 2010 and you think about the Tea Party, many of these Republican representatives were sent to Washington for the sole purpose of obstructing.
Yep.
And of being just a fly in the ointment. And so this is actually what his voters wanted. They wanted someone who was a quote-unquote outsider. They wanted somebody who wasn't familiar with the inner workings of government. They wanted somebody who was going to go in there and just wreak havoc. Because for them, that seems as though he's changing something and he's getting rid of the status quo, and they don't necessarily care that he's replacing the status quo with just sheer incompetence.
Right. And the thing that worries me, though, is, and I had this conversation over the weekend, one of the people I was talking to was puffing out his chest saying, "We dropped the mother of all bombs." And they go, you know, all these things have consequences. And, the right now is, you know, hey, okay, we dropped this big bomb. What did it accomplish? What's the long-term goal? Have they thought this out? And I got to be honest, I look at this president, and I don't know that he's capable of thinking beyond the tip of his nose.
He's not. He's not. And unfortunately, we have a populace that doesn't necessarily think about this stuff, again, until, like we said, you know, the other week, until people start coming home in boxes and we're in this long protracted military intervention. And then they start going, oh, maybe we should have thought this through. Maybe we shouldn't have done this. But again, the jingoism and this we're number one. And we do no wrong, either at home or internationally. That is a insidious belief system that has been passed around in the right wing for many years now. I mean, you know, when Obama took office and he, you know, executed this stance of, I'm going to actually reach out to these countries in the Middle East. I'm not going to say that we're in a war against Islam. You know, I'm going to actually go around and try to see where I can find common ground. And the pushback that he got from the Republican Party was, you're going on a worldwide apology tour. And they don't want somebody who is focused on finding peace or diplomatic strategies. They want someone who is going around and being very bellicose and is starting wars without having all of the information.
Yeah, because I'm still...
And so they were upset by that. They were upset that he was, taking a different tack than George W. Bush did.
Yeah, you know, I look at, you know, the bombing in Styria, and I'm still trying to figure out what the end game was. Okay, you hit the runway. Okay, good. We had a fireworks display. That's great. But what was the end game? I mean, we still don't know, you know, which side to be on at this point.
Yeah, there was no end game, and unfortunately, I don't know if you saw this interview that Trump did with Maria Bartiromo. Trump doesn't even seem to know that he bombed Syria. He said he bombed Iraq.
Yeah.
It is just to have this fireworks display and to put forth an image that he's aggressive and that, you know, he's not going to let somebody talk down to America and, you know, pumping his chest out and doing all of this bravado, again, just to sort of be a penis measuring contest, for lack of a better word.
Yeah, his bombs are bigger. He's got the mother of all bombs,
exactly,
right?
Exactly. It, you know, with all of these authoritarian leaders, and they're just facing off against each other. And it is a competition about bombs, you know, these phallic symbols, and just a question of his manhood. So I do think that there really doesn't necessarily have to be a strategy going forward in his mind. It just needs to look like he's powerful and he's not letting people talk down to him or the country.
Now, were you surprised that he called the, look, there's some irregularities around the election there in Turkey, and there's, you know, a whole bunch of stuff. Were you surprised that he called the leader of Turkey to congratulate him without really, you know, having any context or idea of what was going on there?
No, I'm absolutely not. I think that he sees much of himself in these, you know, authoritarian leaders around the world. And it's no coincidence that he finds himself kind of on the wrong side of the aisle as it comes to Putin, as it comes to just really anybody internationally that has been problematic. In some ways, he wants to align himself with people who are sort of usurping power. And he finds that, I think, very intriguing. You know, heard about his, you know, history, that he's got, you know, had this copy of Mein Kampf on his nightstand, and the elements of Hitler's rise to power. He's so fascinated by that. And, you know, he's fascinated by nuclear war. He basically is just fascinated by things that are, you know, undemocratic, and that are just a brute display of force and power. And I don't think that, you know, the irony is not lost on me that that he's applauding and congratulating this kind of coup that happened, because, again, he himself came into power in one of the most undemocratic, you know, ways that we've seen in recent history, or just ever in American history.
Yeah, I mean, you know, again, you go back to this, and there's so much that we should be focusing on, and yet you turn on the news media, and it's the bombing. It's, you know, it's all of this stuff. It's like on a dime, our entire conscience just changed.
Yeah, and I also think that you know, if, I don't know if you saw this about the USS Carl Vinson, and, you know, Trump kind of coming out and trying to say, oh, yeah, we're already sending, you know, ships out over to North Korea. We're ready to, you know, meet them where they are. And then it turns out, no, this ship was going the complete opposite direction. But again, we endured a week of the media, you know, just latching on to this and using this as some type of a demonstration to sort of ratchet up this conflict with North Korea and make it seem like Trump is you know, laying down the line. But actually, he doesn't even really know where he has all of his military assets. So is he lying just to sort of make himself look more powerful? Or is he really just not even being kept abreast of what's going on?
Or is he just being told what he wants to hear? Because, look, I see him as, and you're right, he's got the authoritarian leanings. He wants to be able to snap his finger and have absolute power, that aphrodisiac of absolute power, because that's what he's had as a CEO. I mean, what, you know, you go back, you listen to the, you remember George Bush saying he was going to be the CEO president. This guy really is the CEO president, because he doesn't think there should be any checks or balances to his power. He is the ultimate leader, supreme ultimate leader.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the White House visitor logs, he's completely shutting down any element of transparency that President Obama tried to bring into the White House, because he doesn't want anybody second-guessing his associations or questioning his allegiance to the American people. But again, I think that makes him look more guilty. And you know, even though the wheels are moving very slow on this treason investigation, it's still becoming very apparent that even the international intelligence community knows a lot about, you know, his dealings with Russia. And so I do think that all of this is sort of meant to be a distraction and meant to look like he's standing up to these dictators, when actually, you know, he's just wanting to be a part of the dictator club.
So what do we do? I mean, you know, because, you know, I look at all of the what we're being force-fed on television, which is a complete distraction. I mean, we're no longer talking about Russia. We're no longer talking about Sessions perjury. We're no longer talking about any of those things. It's now, you know, it's now this, you know, they've created this war environment to make him look like the war president. What do we do?
I think we continue to, you know, push our representatives in Congress to keep this investigation going. And we keep calling calling out just the sheer level of incompetence again. You know, over the last, 24 hours on Twitter, my page has just sort of blown up because people are really concerned about the fact that, he's seemingly forgot Paul Ryan's name. Just the other day, he got the, Kim Jong's confused. And so I think that we have to keep pointing out these inconsistencies, and we have to keep calling into question his integrity and his credibility. Because, yes, the media, is going down the rabbit hole. But, again, this is what the media does. They did the same thing with George W. Bush until it just became, the level of incompetence became so overwhelming that really they didn't have a choice but to actually follow the real story. I mean, of course, it took about 5 years and Hurricane Katrina disaster for them to really pay attention. But I do think that the fact that Trump is not very good at doing his job, and that he is sort of, throwing up shiny thing after shiny thing to distract us, that there's going to continue to be these international incidents, and there will also continue to be these domestic problems that aren't going to go away, no matter what the media says or how they follow him down this rabbit hole. We as a society have to start holding our media accountable, and we have to start holding our elected representatives accountable. Just like we did with Trump Care, calling and saying, hey, this is a problem. And the same thing with the lead up to all of these wars, the same thing that we did in 2003, there were millions of people that were in the street protesting. And, this Tax Day March, I think, is another piece of holding him accountable and just raising the question of his allegiances and the fact that he is not being very transparent. And so the more pressure we put, he has to answer to that. I mean, yes, he can dismiss it out of hand and say, I don't have to show you my tax returns, or this is just a conspiracy or whatever. But the more and more that we show up, the media is not going to be able to ignore us.
And that's the hope. But, here's the thing. I watched his speech yesterday, and to go back to what you said a moment ago about him forgetting names and doing all that, he kept calling Paul Ryan Ron. For like 7 or 8 times, he said, Ron's great. Ron's, doing something with NATO. And then it was a kind of a moment. He goes, no, I meant Paul. And it was, you're right. There was this kind of moment where, he was, and could you argue that maybe that he just has so much on his mind that, this kind of stuff just slips it? Or, is there some serious impairment, as you're saying?
I definitely think that it's serious impairment, and I think the reason why he's unable to keep it together is because there is so much on his mind. There's a million things kind of swirling around, and his ability to walk and chew gum is just not there. He's not able to do multiple things at the same time. And when you start juggling international conflict with the domestic issues that are, flowing around through Congress and trying to actually put forth a legislative agenda, it's just too much.
Right. But here's the thing, Jen, this is one of those things that makes me go, there's a part of me that goes, I'm kind of glad that he's not competent, because a lot of the really horrible stuff hasn't happened. I mean, we didn't see the repeal and replace with pay or die. We're probably not going to see the horrible tax plan that he's proposing go through. A lot of the ugly stuff maybe has stopped for the short term because of his need to be constantly reassured and his need to be constantly adored.
Yeah, absolutely. And I also think that just the stress, as we've been talking about, that the stress is compounding. I mean, this is why we see him, yes, in some respects, he's going to Mar-a-Lago to make money and to sort of be away from, the eyes that are sort of watching him in the White House. But at the same time, he is needing a break from everything. He's, as soon as he's, letting off all this bluster towards North Korea, he goes to, and he's drops this bomb on Syria, and the next thing he spends 2 days completely off the radar playing golf. And so yes, you know, the he's overwhelmed, he's overstimulated, and his ability, I think, to do all of these things at the same time is so compromised. And so it again leads to people like Jared and Ivanka having to come around and pick up the pieces where he's not able to perform. And now you see Mike Pence sort of taking, you know, more of a role internationally in these diplomatic relations, and, you know, Tillerson obviously going and communicating with Russia. Other people are having to do his job for him. And so it's exposing just the sheer level of incompetence. If you compare him to President Obama and all of the things that President Obama was able to do all at the same time, you can really see how Trump is not able to even do just a fraction of those things without having, you know, a temper tantrum, a complete meltdown, or getting into this, you know, back and forth emotionally with the people he's supposed to be working with.
So let me ask
you
this.
So I do think that it's exposing a lot of that.
So let me ask you this, you know, given that, and as this pressure builds, in your professional opinion, you know, as
right.
this stuff continues to pile on and pile on, because it's not going to get easier from here, especially with all of the cans of worms that we're opening up all around the world. I mean, Iran's on notice. We're rattling the saber with North Korea. We're bombing Syria. We're bombing Afghanistan. We're doing all these things on all these different fronts. And there's a lot of things to juggle. You know, how does he devolve? What should we be looking for? Because I got to imagine the pressure just is, you know, it's got to explode at some point.
Right. And I think the way that he is coping, again, is by, you know, like if you look at the text march that happened the other day, you know, he took to Twitter that morning and just went on this, you know, extensive rant. And again, you know, the paranoia is very evident. The fact that he feels like people are ganging up on him, and the fact that he is sort of criticizing the media, even though, again, they're doing the best that they can to sort of kiss up to him.
Yep.
But yet and still, he's still lashing out. I mean, there doesn't ever, but, you know, get to a point where there's a ceasefire. And I think that is just, you know, an exhibition of how he's feeling internally. And he is very trapped by the job, the constraints of the job. And even after, you know, all of this bluster with North Korea, Mattis had to come in and kind of tamp everything down, because I think they appreciate that it's looking very chaotic. And so there are people around him who are trying to rein it in and trying to better articulate our foreign policy. And that's a direct response to him being so erratic. And so what he's going to continue to do is he's going to continue to just throw out wild accusations. He's going to continue to get bogged down in this kind of battle with anyone who questions him, anyone who sort of goes along with the resistance movement is an enemy to him. And so I do think that he's not going to be able to contain himself or comport himself in a presidential way. And that's just more of an indication that he feels very inadequate and insecure about the job he's doing as president.
Yeah, everything you've said, another reason why no one should have voted for him. I mean, because this isn't new.
Yeah.
I mean, we knew this then, didn't we?
Yeah, I mean, Hillary said it so many times, easily baited and temperamentally unfit. And this is the risk that we run by putting someone who's personality disordered and cognitively impaired into that office, because he's not taking any steps to rein himself in, and no one around him can rein him in. And so it just is just a disaster every single day. It's an avalanche of disaster, as I say. And so we told you so. She told you so. I mean, you know, everybody was pointing this out. And you could see in his history as a businessman that this is how he handles any sort of contradiction or confrontation of these grandiose delusions he has about himself, that he's competent and he's powerful and he's popular, that his response is always going to be these emotional battles. It's always going to be defensiveness and being accusatory of other people. It's not going to get any better. I think it's only going to get worse.
Let the fun begin. Jane, I appreciate your thoughts. I appreciate your input and the weekly dose of a bit of sanity. Thanks.
All right. I appreciate you having me. Keep up the fight and have a good week.
Always great talking with you. Thanks so much. Again, if you want to check out some of her stuff, we'll get a link at thericksmithshow.com. Fabulous, fabulous, fabulous. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.